fear is a good thing because it can drive you. Fear is a bad thing when it paralyzes you. You know, you can use that fear. You can use it in your work.
A warm welcome to Our Spirited Life, the broadcast for women who simply won't settle. This season, we're talking about life in our third act, indeed owning our third act. And today, I'm completely delighted to welcome Dinah Jeffries. I'm sure that many of our audience will recognise you, Dinah, as the best-selling author of lots of Sunday Times top tens, including number one bestsellers such as The Tea Planter's Wife, and I think also The Sapphire Widow was a number one bestseller. So welcome, Dinah.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Absolute pleasure. And it's fabulous to have you with us today. I absolutely love your books and your sassy zest for life. I also love that you began writing when you were 60, were first published at 65, and are now published in no less than 28 foreign languages. You've had two Richard and Judy picks, and you describe all that as not bad for a 72-year-old granny. So please tell us a little bit about getting published later in life and the challenges of being older, as you put it, in a world of much younger writers.
Publishing is in love with younger writers. There's no doubt about that. There's huge excitement when a very young author gets published for the first time and it looks like it's going to be a major bestseller. And so if you read what you find on the internet about getting published when you're older, it probably would put you off. Instead of putting me off, I thought, right, I'm not having that. And so I started to write, age 60. I had no idea if I could do it. I'd always loved reading. I'd always enjoyed, I don't know, writing in a diary, a bit of scribbling here and there. But when I set out to write my first book, which wasn't published, and I very much regard it as a learning experience. It was my master's degree, which I never did. And so you just have to start. You start, you throw yourself into it, you keep going, and you finish. And I had no idea whether it was any good. I had no idea what I was doing. I didn't know who to ask.
So what motivated you to begin writing rather than, I don't know, painting or something else?
Well, I had been painting for about a decade prior to starting to write. And we'd gone to live in Spain, which had previously been a holiday home. And we'd been there a little while. And I had had this idea that I would try and write a novel one day. And it was just like that, one day. Nothing too sort of exciting or, you know, it was just one of those things.
You felt you had a book in you.
Possibly. Or 10. Anyway.
Very interesting childhood and upbringing, didn't you, abroad? So you've got a sort of a wealth of stuff in you, maybe, that just needed to be expressed?
Well, I think the thing was that with that very first book, it wasn't published. It got me an agent, though. And the most important thing in publishing is actually to have an agent who fights your battles. You know, she's in your corner. She gets you your deals. She deals with the publishers, or he. I've got a she. And it was only when I wrote The Separation, which was, she said, no, I can't accept, I can't sell this book, but send me your next one. And that was the one that I pretty much based on my childhood in Malaya. And so it was full of me more than any other book. One of the characters is almost me. I didn't realize that when I was writing it. It's only in hindsight that, you know, I've recently listened to the audio of it and I think, oh my goodness, I hadn't realized I'd put that in or that in. Or, you know, but so it was drawing on real experience, and so it had life in it, it had authenticity in it, and those are really important things. And that one worked and got me my agent, got me my publisher, got me some foreign deals.
And so I think it's just that key that unlocks the door then, and then you've got to keep delivering. But if I may, why was the first book not publishable? You know, because you're still you, you're still writing. Okay, maybe it's a practice run, but what was wrong with it?
It wasn't a strong enough book. Books have to be strong. Okay. In lots and lots of different ways. The structure has to be strong. The characters have to be strong. There is a life to a novel that isn't like real life at all, although fiction tries to be like real life. But actually, if you read a book that was like real life, you'd be bored stiff. So there is a pattern to a novel that you have to understand. I didn't understand any of it. I mean, I just wrote boom. It's only over time that I've understood there are sort of various guiding principles. So sometimes I forget them even now, though.
Yes. And I guess that's because you must get so involved with the characters you're creating. It must be, I mean, I know sometimes people get writer's block and they stare at that blank page, but if you've got all that life and character inside you, do you get quite fond? Do you have feelings for your characters? Do you dislike the ones that, you know, you, because I know you as you are zesty, and because I remember there was once I put on Facebook about not really liking the word hate, and I prefer to use dislike, and you said, you know, you actually commented on that and said hate's a very strong, passionate word. And so do you get involved with your characters?
I think absolutely, especially as you're writing the first draft. Obviously, editing is a whole other ball game. But when you're writing the first draft, you have to be involved with those characters. You have to feel what they feel. You have to experience what they experience. You have to understand them. And of course, you don't always understand them when you start writing a novel. It's as you go along, you get used to the characters and you begin to understand who they are. And you'll often find yourself going back and adding things to earlier chapters because you suddenly think, aha, of course, she's going to feel like that. I hadn't realized that. And so on. So, yes, you become attached to your characters. But, you know, it's a very weird business because you're writing one book, you may be editing another book, you may get an email from Croatia saying, can you do a video about the book we're now publishing? And that could be four books ago. And I've got to try and remember the characters and what they do. And it's, you know.
Yeah, you've got to keep switched on. And it must be a very solitary existence in some ways.
It's very solitary. Lockdown has been brilliant. I got I changed publisher this year for the after seven books with Penguin. I decided I needed a change, and I'm writing a trilogy from HarperCollins. And so during that first lockdown, I wrote the first draft of the new book. But the difficulty for me is with the pandemic is all my books are set abroad, and the location and the setting are almost like characters in the books. And so,
yeah, because your descriptions are beautiful. And I know that you'd got trips to Italy planned, for instance, during first lockdown that you just couldn't do.
No, so, I did the Italy ones. I did the Italy ones. Because the Italy book came out July 2020. So that was all done. I had four trips to Italy, which were wonderful. I loved it.
What an excuse to travel.
I know. I always places I want to go.
Yes.
So this year, the first book I set in the Dordogne, and I haven't been there for 50 years. So that was hard. And then now the next book in the trilogy is set partly in Devon, which was easy because we went there in the autumn and I used to live there. But it's also set in Malta. where I've never been and know nothing about. So I'm not enjoying the challenges of not going to the location.
Yeah, because it's all very well researching things online, but when you're in a place, you can get a feel for it, can't you? It's sort of you can absorb that into you. So I'm interested to know. Obviously, you started writing at the age of 60. What do you think are the advantages or even disadvantages of starting something later in life, something new later in life?
Well, I can only really speak about writing because that's the only thing I have started later. And I think I said one of the advantages is you've got a wealth of life experience. You've been through all the highs and lows. You've experienced losses and gains, success and failures, all the different emotions. You know what they are. To a certain extent, you know what to do with them and how to deal with them. And you draw on all that when you write, because at the end of the day, all you've got is yourself when you write. For a younger author, though, I think the advantage for some younger authors is they can find an originality and a fresh voice that maybe is harder for an older writer, because after all, we've got a wealth of reading experience as well as life experience. We think we know what books we like. We think we know what books are, what novels need to be, and that will inform an older writer.
Yeah.
And a much younger writer isn't necessarily going to write a better book or be able to write lots of books. But every now and again, a younger writer comes along who has a fresh, original, distinctive voice, which is very exciting. And I think on the whole, that's harder for older people.
Yeah, but it's just different, isn't it? Just the differences.
Exactly. It is just
And I think there's, if something's good, there's always room for it. I remember when I started wedding photography after I'd done my photography degree, and I woke up in the night and I just wanted to do weddings more than anything. And in fact, I asked one of my tutors, do you think I'm selling out by doing weddings? But actually she said, no, Susie, you know, you've got the perfect personality for it. But also, it's one of the most important and joyful days in someone's life. So it's a real privilege as well as a responsibility. And yet after 10 years, I felt that much as though I loved them, obviously I was getting older. And what I knew was that there were so many young photographers, super talented, coming up who thought outside that traditional box, you know, and as you talk about the freshness. But one of the things that I thought about when I started was that, you know, there are so many wedding photographers out there, but there's always room for another one if they're good enough to fit in, or not fit in, but if they're good enough to make a difference.
Make a difference, exactly.
Yeah.
And I think that's what publishers are always looking for. So I think because mine all came from having had a childhood in the Far East, that was my, if you like, unique selling point.
Yeah.
And because I write complex characters and, you know, strong emotions, strong stories, that's what sort of defined me. But also, and I think this happens to authors of any age, it doesn't matter young or old, you can get trapped in your own success and you can get trapped by your definition. And I think that's the problem, because as writers, we always want to be trying to find something new, facing a different challenge in the writing, because if there isn't that, you start churning things out. And that's something I never wanted to do. And I think that's one of the reasons I changed direction a little bit anyway. They're always worried if you want to change direction, because they want you to take your readership with you.
Yes, and also I suppose you've got a successful formula and they're a bit scared of changing that. But I admire you for making that change. And I'd love to know what you've learnt about yourself through the process of becoming a best-selling author.
Okay. Well, I am a workaholic. I prefer working to anything else. I prefer creating to anything else. I love bringing things into being that didn't exist before.
Love that.
It's an addiction. I always call it an addiction, and most writers would agree with me. But the hardest thing I've found, and I'm still finding, is being driven by the creative act, whether it's music or art, or in my case, writing novels, being driven by this creative act, where does that leave me? My health, my sanity, my sleep.
So how do you find ways to honor your whole self with the
Well, I
passion
often
you're?
don't, is the plain answer. There are periods when I'm good, and I will make sure I walk first thing in the morning, clear my head, make sure I've got the blood pumping through my body. As I walk, I always say positive stuff to myself. I say, you can do this, you've got this, you're able to do this.
So, do you have a routine then to ensure that you look after yourself as well? Because the pressure of deadlines and producing a book a year must be enormous. I mean, you're under contract, aren't you?
Yeah, it's very hard actually. I mean, I remember when I started writing, my mother-in-law said, she's a very old-fashioned lady, very nice but very old-fashioned, and she said, "Oh, do you just pop upstairs, darling, when the inspiration hits you?" And I said, "Well, actually, if I'm waiting for inspiration, I never write a word. You know, it's a job, and you have to
It's a
treat it
job.
like a job." But it is hard. The deadlines are hard, and you're for the as you write the first draft, you're totally in isolation. You've only got your own head and what's going on in it. And this thing, this octopus that you're creating of people and events and places, and has to have some kind of shape. And it can drive you insane, actually. I know quite a few authors who've just kind of flipped.
And also maybe given up. There's a wonderful saying that I remember you telling me about something about it's about not giving up. Can you remember it, Dinah?
Not
There
giving
are
up.
so many un the only the successful author is a the only unsuccessful authors are one the ones who gave up or something. Yeah, you are the discipline, the self-discipline must be extraordinary. But what about self-doubt? How do you have self-doubt and how do you deal with that?
My editor at Penguin, this wonderful woman, she always said, there isn't a single writer who doesn't have imposter syndrome. And you just have to boot it out, really. On the whole, I boot it out. If I hear the doubter in my head, oh God, this book's awful. What do you think you're doing? You know, that happens to everyone throughout the writing of a novel. And basically, if you stop at that point, well, that's the end, isn't it? So you have to keep going. You have to keep going. And you just have to boot the doubter out and don't, you know, don't listen to it. That doesn't mean it's all plain sailing. I mean, certainly with this book I'm writing now, I have huge doubts about it. But the difference is I've got doubts about the book. And not it doesn't instantly mean I've got doubts about me.
Ah, yes. And I think that's key with the creative character and personality is that perhaps we are more prone to self-doubt because what we're creating comes from us, it's part of us. And so we might be more sensitive to criticism. Do you get negative reviews
Oh
and
God, yes. I don't know anyone who doesn't.
okay,
I
so
mean,
how do you cope with those?
my editor, again, my first editor, said, don't read any of the reviews, because she said, you can have hundreds of five-star reviews. The one you'll remember is the one stars.
That's human nature.
I know. And she's so right. So I very rarely read reviews. I will read reviews when I've got a blog tour and it's bloggers who've taken the time. Then I'll read those reviews. But reviews on Amazon, no. I'll have a look now and again, but there's no point. Reviews are for buyers. Reviews are for readers.
Okay. So you don't need to feed your ego then, because we all have ego and we all like nice things being said about ourselves. But maybe that's where complete confidence in what we do comes in. If you can stay away from the reviews, then you know that what you're doing has a place in this world.
Well, I think the thing is, I've just got disciplined about it.
Yeah,
I know from my very first experiences that they can devastate you. They can floor you. You can feel you have absolutely no ability at all, because some reviewers are mean, you know. And they're not just mean about me. And what I used to do was, when I found mean reviews, and they go, she hates me. She didn't just hate my book, she hates me.
Yeah.
And I would look at reviews of authors who I know are brilliant authors. And there would be the one-star reviews. And whilst everyone's got their opinion, they don't always have to be so unpleasant about it.
Yeah. So we talked about confidence and the confidence that success can bring, because it's bound to, you know, and I think the validation that you've received from having Richard and Judy Picks, from being number one bestseller, gosh, that must validate what you do and give you confidence in that success. But in spite of that, and alongside that, do you still feel you have something to prove as an author? And or as you?
Well, the only thing I have to prove it to myself is that I can try and do something different.
Mm-hmm.
And the book that I'm writing, the book I set in the Dordogne, which is my first in the trilogy for HarperCollins, it's called Daughters of War, and it's about three sisters and their lives during 1944. In occupied France. And I loved writing that book because I loved the three sisters, and I'm really enjoying developing them in the next book and then hopefully in the third book. I can't remember what the question was now.
It's about, did you feel you have something, still have something to prove?
Okay, so with that book, I had three narrative voices, three point of view characters who had chapters of their own. And my previous editor wasn't keen on that. She was keen on single narrative, or a little bit more maybe, but, and I wanted to try to write a three point of view character book. And so that was a challenge, because if you've got different points of view, you're chopping and changing. And also, you have to guard against your reader really loving this one and then being disappointed when it goes to this one. So that was a new thing for me to prove to myself that I could do it. Those are the kind of challenges now that I need. And
Well, it's not really, because proving. Challenges keep us on our toes, don't they?
Absolutely. It's what keeps you fresh. It's what keeps you. And actually, you know, the most difficult birth, the most difficult book birth, is frequently a better book. You know, it isn't always, because The Tea Planter's Wife, which was the number one, and it was in the top 10 for about, I think, 4 months.
Was that the first book that you actually had published?
No, The Separation was the first one, set in the lair. Tea Planter's Wife was the second. But that actually was a dream to write, and it wasn't a difficult birth. They're all different. They're all different and they all pose their challenges. But I think it was really important for me to start trying something a little bit different, not different from necessarily someone else might be doing that all the time, but different for me.
Yeah.
And that's what it's not so much proving anything, except I suppose proving I can do it.
Yeah. And I suppose in a way, perhaps once that book is written, I'd love to ask, it must be very difficult, or do you find it not so difficult to actually finish it and then let it go?
Well, it's a very gradual process. Excuse me. I think some tonic water went up my nose. So the first draft, it's downloading your story.
Yeah.
Then you edit it a bit yourself to make it bearable before you send it to your editor. Then you get a structural edit, which can be quite massive. Chapters get moved around, whole characters might get eliminated. They're harsh. Brutal. They're brutal. Oh, and then
that's hard that you've.
Yeah, it's very. I had to cut 49,000 words of one book, which is half the book. But then you get what they call a line edit, which isn't a copy edit. It's more about a timeline, and that doesn't quite fit, and what you said there, you're repeating it here, and we need more affection here, or I don't believe what she's saying here, I don't buy that. And it's more detailed, not structural, but detailed. Then after that, you get the copy edit, which is a different editor again, and that'll be grammar, spelling, again, timeline, smaller things, really. After that, you get the page proofs, which isn't a book like this yet.
Yeah.
It's A4 pages, but as it will appear when it's a book. And you go, and I've just finished that of Daughters of War, and you go through that, and I had 44 pages which still needed changes. And then after that, you get a proof, which is almost a finished book, but it's not, it hasn't got the raised lettering or the final acknowledgements. It's the book they send out to other authors for quotes, to magazines.
Yes.
And then you finally, get your full book. And by then, to be honest, you're sick to death of it.
You've had enough of it. Yeah. You know, like, I shall never. I love reading books. When I go to bed at night, it's how I unwind and relax. I get into a good book, and I think I've read almost apart. I've just started that one, the Tuscan Contessa, but I'll never take them for granted again, Dinah. You know, the process of going through them and the brutality that the author has to go through is extraordinary. So I want to know about your belief about learning or challenging yourself. Do you believe that is for life? And if so, one, I know you're going to say yes. So why do you think that's so important to keep on learning and keep on challenging yourself?
Well, it isn't sort of even a question for me, because it's sort of, I think it's who I am.
Okay.
It's always something I've done. It's, you know, if I stopped writing tomorrow, I said this to Richard the other day when I was so fed up with it. I was getting so many headaches. I wasn't sleeping. I was worried about the book, so on. And I just thought, do you know what? I'm not going to write anymore after these three. I'm going to sit down and I'm going to learn Italian. But the thing is, I know that I will go on writing after these three, unless something drastic changes, because at the end of the day, it's the most exciting. This, when you do get your final copy, it's just doesn't matter whether it sells or not in a way, because that's an achievement.
It's a tangible result of all that pain and, you know, effort and magnificence that you and discipline that you've put into how it's a whole year, isn't it, of your life that you've given to creating that. So having that tangible book in your hands must feel amazing. And I know that feeling as well with my anthologies. So that brings us nicely into your top tips. I always ask my guests for some top tips that they would like to share. And I'd like to ask you your top tips for creating success and fulfillment later in life that you're happy to share with us, please, Dinah.
Well, I think this tip is a tip I need to keep using myself, because when I feel I don't know what I'm doing, which is quite often, I really don't know what I'm doing. And I can't face having to sit down and work out what the next chapters might be, because I don't plan the whole book in advance. Lots of people do, but I don't. And I have to sort of get out of my own way, and I have to actually stop listening to my own excuses.
Mm.
And so, you know, the excuse will be, oh, I'm not ready. You'll never be ready. It's really important to know what your mind is doing and why your mind is stopping you. If you want to do something, you just have to do it.
Yes.
You know, I remember Marianne Keyes saying, you know, people were asking, well, how do you start? You just sit down and start.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't matter what you write.
Yeah.
You just start, because otherwise there's always going to be blocks and boundaries and reasons why not. And you haven't got enough time, or the kids are in the way, or, you know, so on and so forth. There's a million reasons. And I still, you know, fear is the biggest block, I think. And okay. I think it's that feel the fear and do it anyway. That book, feel the fear and do it anyway.
Yeah.
Dive in, be scared later.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah. I mean, fear is a good thing because it can drive you. Fear is a bad thing when it paralyzes you. You know, you can use that fear. You can use it in your work. You can
actually, you know, if you are paralyzed by fear, you can always get help. You know, I am blessed. Many of the women of spirit in the books, and many people that I know are kind of therapists, healers, coaches. And there's many, many different ways in which you can help yourself. You can make that choice to help yourself by getting help to unstick you, or helping you to get out of your own way. And I know you did a course with Bertie, who appears in Women of Spirit Book 2, because she and Philippa had the Rise and Shine Academy. And I know you found that absolutely fantastic. And I loved your video testimonial for them on that. But so what prompted you to do that? Because that was about that getting yourself, well, rise and shine.
Yes. Well, it was called Unleash Your Potential.
Okay.
As you know. And my agent, when I told her, she laughed. She said, Dinah, I think you've unleashed it. but you know, something was prodding at me. You know how sometimes you don't know a sort of conscious reason why you're doing something, or something will appear and you just, it speaks to you. That course just spoke to me. I have had health issues for a long time. I still have them. The course didn't make them vanish. But I blame Bertie entirely for me changing publishers and taking on a contract for a trilogy, which is like, oh my God, I think that's why I'm not sleeping. But it was brilliant. It was brilliant.
Yeah.
It galvanized me.
Yes, and sort of sets you right. Yeah, unleashing. I think that's a great word.
It's a great
and
word.
I know that perseverance is key, isn't it?
Well, that's the other thing, because most important thing is starting, and the second most important thing is finishing, because you know there's a lot of people with half finished, I would say half finished manuscripts in their drawers, but they're probably the half finished manuscripts in their computers. I think it's really important to finish, and the way you do that is by just doing it day after day after day, even when you don't feel like it, especially when you don't feel like it. And if you're stuck, as you say, there's lots of ways to get around that. For a writer, one of the ways to get around being stuck is just to read something else, see what someone else is doing, be inspired by someone else's writing, watch a film.
Yes, or maybe instead of staring at that blank screen, maybe speak something, say the words.
Yes, absolutely.
So what about your belief in dream big, execute small?
Okay, well, I think that's because you have the big vision. And especially this is so true of novel writing. I don't know really about starting a business or something. It probably applies. But if you dream big, this is the book, this is the one, and this is what it's going to be about. And these are the characters. But then, you know, you have to take tiny steps every single day, 1,000 words, 1,000 words. And when you've got to do 100,000 words, that can seem like a very, very big ask. So it's the think big, but remember that every little step you take is furthering you, is getting you closer to where you want to be. You can't stay in dream big. You have to come down. But every now and again, you go dream big again. And it reminds you your overall vision of the book. So it's a balance between those two things. And I don't know whether that does apply to someone starting a business or I think it probably does. It's just a bit different.
Yeah, it's that keep moving, isn't it? Which is really. And what about belief, Dinah?
Well, self-belief. That was one of the things that came up in the Unleash Your Potential, the degree to which people lack genuine self-belief and how all the negative voices from our childhoods, from our past, our relationship are somehow inside us, telling us that we aren't good enough, that we aren't clever enough, that we aren't talented enough. And the world will tell you that too, if that's what you're looking for. Yeah. So there's two things. I think one thing is to, you can only grow your self-belief little by little, but you start with the voices in your head. You start with telling yourself you can do it, you will do it. And the other thing connected to that is, and I love this, comparison is the thief of joy, because you look at what you know, someone else is achieving and you think, oh God, I can't do that. And it instantly downs you. But there's always going to be people doing better, selling more, richer, happier. There's always going to be few people doing worse, you know. So I think you just leave the comparison out of it and focus on you.
Yes, I was going to say, just be you. Yeah.
And that self-belief, I would say it comes, because of course it does come, but it doesn't mean you've lost the battle. I mean, you've won the battle. There will be all those doubts that come and go. There will be times when you don't feel great about what you're doing, and you just have to ride it and not take too much notice of all that stuff in your head.
Yeah, and I think your idea of loving what you do and finding, if you love what you do, you are going to persevere, you are going to persist, and you're going to get through whatever external influences try to knock you off course, because if you love what you do, that is will keep you firmly on your course. I'm just having my new websites nearly ready, and I found some beautiful quotes. I adore quotes. It's by Howard Thurman, and it goes something like this. Don't ask what the world needs. Find what makes you come alive and then go do that.
Absolutely. And yeah. I think that's the whole thing about the writing, why I call it an addiction, because it is yourself.
Yeah.
You are writing yourself.
Nobody else can do what you do.
No.
So this brings me, there's a wonderful wisdoms, by the way, thank you. But it brings me to the song choice. I love this song. It's one that I know, and I think one that our audience will know. So please tell us what it is and why you chose it. Is there a story behind this choice?
It's Hey Jude by the Beatles, and the key line is take a sad song and make it better. And you know, I lost my son when he was 14, and it was the sad, sad song of my life. And I think in drawing on experiences of loss and recovery, I've through my books taken a sad song and made it better. And so that's why that song means so much to me.
Yeah, thank you for sharing that so much. And thank you for being here with us. It's been a real joy to listen to your words of wisdom, Dinah, and why I wanted to record this in video as well as audio is because I'm visual as a photographer and as a people person. And now more than ever, I think we need to bring uplifting words, inspiration, wisdom, fun into people's homes. Podcasts are fabulous, and of course, this will go up by audio. But I think it's going to be a real treat for people to see you, to see my guests, and to be able to look into the eyes of the person who's speaking. So thank you so much for being with us today.
Well, thank you for having me. I've loved it.
Oh, bless your heart. Thank you.
So, for more inspiration and ideas on how to live a truly spirited life, just press subscribe. And if you'd like to continue the conversation, join the Our Spirited Life Facebook group, and details of how to do that will accompany this broadcast. So, everyone, stay fabulous, stay spirited, and see you again soon.
If you enjoyed this broadcast, please remember to like and subscribe. And to enjoy fabulous extra value, just click the link to our membership page.